In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Not for the Bills. They play tomorrow, so this is not the middle of the week. This is travel day, you know.
Yeah, this is
week two eve.
This is Saturday.
This is Saturday for the Bills.
It's 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Why am I not having a beer?
Great question. I don't know. That's a you question.
Yeah.
It's rhetorical.
Let me go check the fridge.
Is that what that means? That's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I'm not really. I know why I'm not having a beer because it's not really Saturday. It doesn't feel like Saturday for me.
Are the night games now just like old hat, whatever that expression actually means? Old hat? I mean, it went from all those years of, please, can I just get a couple Sunday night ever? Is Al ever coming back? All that stuff. And then it got to the point, I mean, pretty fast by 2020, where they were playing a lot of night games. 21, you know. Mm-hmm. Then it's like Sal and his schedule guy talking about how, like, you know, they're free money
on
the schedule.
How many night games are teams allowed to have? How many
right.
Will you schedule them? And then can you leave flexibility to flex them into more and that sort of thing? I don't think it's quite old hat. I mean, I do think at some point, I would say more the year before last than last year because of the snow and the home game in Detroit and just it was just very unsettled, and I was craving some stability, you know, just some regularity, I guess. So there's always that, but I still think when the game is approaching, once you get past whatever is convenient or inconvenient for, yourself or thinking about the team and their routine and whether they're, you know, distracted by the irregularity of it, it's still awesome to play at night. Like you just it's still, I think, awesome. Yes. So I don't think
it's old hat.
No, I don't think it's old hat.
Current hat.
I think, you know, like anything that you do a lot that you thought initially was awesome, you know, you may find yourself complaining about this or that about it, but ultimately I would still settle on it's awesome.
That is a good thing in life if you can keep that kind of perspective, because I find that most things are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where something exciting happens, you know, maybe when you're younger, and then the same thing happens a number of times, and it's not, you know, it's right. Not as interesting or cool anymore. Good if you can, like, keep it cool.
Yeah.
Keep it interesting.
When the alarm goes at 6 a.m. for a weekday round of golf in June and July, it's like, let's go. Somebody get the car and I'll get the coffee on. Nobody else is up. I can't yell to anyone. I'm the only one awake. Although Owen is often up that early now to go to work. Today, the alarm went, I don't know if I really want to play today. Stay in bed. You plow through it.
What do you think that gets you up? Like, what is the thought?
I'll be really mad in an hour if I just lie here.
Yeah. Like mad, or you'll be upset with yourself. You know,
that's what I mean. You know, I'm not going to go. I'm probably not going to go back to sleep. I mean, who am I kidding? Because, you know, even if I roll over and try to, I'm going to be like, I got a tea time. So it's just, you just got to kind of plow through it. But that does start to, there is a more adversity there than there was a couple of months ago.
When it's optional, right. It can be very tempting
and
to just not
today
bother.
I wasn't meeting anyone. Mm-hmm. Right, I didn't have a foursome or a twosome. It was just me. So, you know, if I don't show up, I mean, I don't know. The starter might be like looking at the tee sheet going, oh, where's Parker? But other than that, and I think that he probably wouldn't dwell on that very long, I don't think. But, you know, you get through it. I got up. I went.
So no Raheem Mostert for the Dolphins tomorrow night. We'll talk to Armando Salguero, as we so often do before Bills-Dolphins games. He's more of a national reporter now, but he's Miami and he's who we call, and it's always good to talk to Armando. So that'll be today. Devon Achane they're calling him Game Time. I saw a report from an onlooker at Dolphins practice today, which, like, it's a walkthrough day. They play tomorrow night, but he seems like he's, you know, participant.
He wasn't in a different jersey or anything, and he did, from what I read, did everything everyone else did. So maybe that's encouraging.
Is it
for them?
Is it too much to say, in terms of the Bills, that this game is kind of a bonus if they get it?
Yeah, I think that's too much. I mean, it's a division team that you battled to week 18 with for the division title last year. And so, I can't get to bonus. I mean, it would sting a lot less if they lost, then, say, if they hadn't managed to get off the mat last week against Arizona. I mean, that's a very different thing. Home opener against a team that you rarely see, and a lot of people aren't thinking that highly of. They're probably better than what people think of Arizona going into the game. But still, that would have really been rancid. Miami is a contending-level team. I think they're... You know, the Bills have had the upper hand on them, but I don't really think of Miami necessarily, especially in the regular season, as on a tier below the Bills. I think they're pretty equal. They haven't beaten as many good teams as the Bills, and they haven't had any playoff success, but that's a team that was in control of the division with 5 weeks to go. We know they blew it, but... You know, they could certainly go win their 10, 11 games again, maybe even 12. They don't play the identical schedule the Bills play. They play the second-place version of the Bills' schedule, so it's a little easier. They don't have to deal with Kansas City. They get who was second in the AFC West last year. I don't even
know. Probably the Raiders.
So, you know, that's good for them. So I'm going to be battling them all year. So I don't think I can afford to look at it like it's a bonus if I get it. But I already said, it's... To me, there's no shame in losing to Miami.
It's the much bigger game for the Dolphins.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know. I want to now question much bigger. But it's just like, I say this all the time. I think we all know this. Just what the Bills have meant to the Dolphins in the last 5 years or whatever. You're just, Miami can't have, you know, any sort of joy unless they get past the Bills in this division for once. Because, like, you know, you're just another team unless you can get to the top. And the Bills are their problem. They have been their problem for years in a period of time where they've been good. Miami goes into this season again. The odds are pretty flattering. People love the coach. Tua is skinny. You know, the speed is all still there. Like,
does he still know how to fall? Did he work on that again this offseason?
I know he lost weight.
Okay.
So... I don't know. It's still week two. No matter what you say about it,
right?
It's always just week two. And sure. Who even remembers week two other years? Like, it's still so early. But Bills lose the game. You play them at home in the middle of the season. and long way to go. You know what happened last year. We were down three with five left. There's no panic or anything That's like right. that. Miami, I could see not panic, but just like, here we go again.
Right. Same. Yeah. We're a game behind these guys already. The next time we play them, we'll be up there. And this is now 12 out of the last 13. Is what Miami would be staring at. And yeah, there's plenty of time to recover for them too, but I agree. I mean, they are in the position of weakness here. Like they need to establish that they can beat the Bills more than just once every 12 times they play. If you want to really be treated as equals. I mean, I'm giving him that as the game, you know, approaches here, because, you know, record-wise, they are comparable to the Bills the last couple of years. They've met in the playoffs even, and like we already talked about, duked it out for the division last year, and the Bills had to come from way back to get it. But there's no denying. You've been saying it since, I don't know, when the schedule came out, or certainly in the last, like, few weeks that we've been together since vacation time ended. This, for Miami, this is, you know, can we do it?
It would be the game on the schedule, I think.
Right.
And, you know, it's early, so, you know, again, acknowledging that all this is sort of narrative stuff, but this is the Dolphins' chance to announce whether anything's different. And if, you know, here this matchup, too, like, you play the game at home, and the Bills, the concern I have for them, and this is probably a lot of people, is, like, the back seven on defense. Miami is... whether it's Achane or not, you know, it makes a difference, I think, if it is. I don't know how much of a difference Mostert makes, but Hill and Waddle and Tua and that guy, Achane, if he plays, like, that's pretty much the full complement.
It's three of the fastest players in the league that you're going to be dealing with really very much a reformulated back seven.
At least the Bills had, if they weren't fast, you know, last year, previous years, in the secondary, they were experienced against that team. And, you know, a lot of this game might come down to pass pressure like it often is. But I'm sort of worried about this. I did, as I do on Wednesdays, Matthew Collar's podcast this morning, Purple Insider, about the Vikings, and he has me on to talk fantasy. And we do these underdog pick'em contests. And two things about this. So for all the talk, and we have done a lot of it last couple days about how dramatically lower passing yards were in week one, like a big drop, the lowest average passing yard total week one in at least 25 years. I mean, just crazy. So with that, Tua went for like 336. And he scored 20 points, but he went for 336. He did not have this particular challenge. And that's, you know, when Tyreek Hill can just run away from everybody 80 yards,
that
obviously helps.
Right.
And the Bills really don't have that, or they, you know, they might not. They didn't have it last week.
Well, they definitely, they haven't had someone as fast as Tyreek Hill or Waddle or Devin Achane this whole window that's, you know, been the contending Super Bowl window they're in. They haven't had a guy that was really that fast. I don't think, unless maybe Hardy was that fast, but he barely played last year.
Yeah.
So they've never, you know, so they don't even really get to practice against that. You know, like that, I've heard Steve Tasker on the show that's on, you know, before us here, One Bills Live, on weekdays, say this quite, like, you just don't, the speed is so jarring once you get there. Even for guys that have seen it, like, and have played against it, it just is another level. You know, I guess it depends. Some of that perspective depends on when you play them. You've already played a game. You played a normal team that doesn't have those three dudes on it. And now you're going to go get on the field, and that's what's coming at you. And it's, you know, all the motion and misdirection and all that stuff, too, coupled with the speed. You know, it's a lot. I think they're just looking to confuse you, like just mess with your eyes, even if it just causes a moment of hesitation or confusion. That can be all you need when you've got that kind of speed. It's lethal.
On that underdog pick'em contest thing, Tua's over under, or high or lower they call it over there, same as what you'd see on like the betting apps, like 268, 269, some number like that. And so that seems about commensurate with everything. Didn't he lead the league in passing yards last year as well?
I believe that's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a pretty high number, and the Bills have their questions on defense. But you're still, like, to go higher than that, you are expecting either garbage time, I guess that could be possible, but you're expecting the Dolphins to get theirs, you know, through the air. So Allen, though, every Bills fan knows how he has dominated Miami. Like, that's just sort of fun for everybody to think about. It is 11 out of 12. The Bills' last loss to the Dolphins, other than the one that was played on the surface of the sun, is Charles Clay. Back when Allen was a rookie, it would have been his first start against Miami, and they were like inches right on that play from beating them then.
Yep.
Later that season, this is 2018, the Bills hammered him here, end of that year. So, I mean, he's crushed them. Last five games against the Dolphins, passing, including playoffs, if it does. I think the middle one of these games is a playoff game, yes. Passing yards, 359, 320, 352, 304, 400. That's 15 touchdown passes, four picks. He was intercepted twice in the Week 18 game, but still, 30 for 38. This was a 21-14 win.
Yeah, I
30
know.
For 38, 359, 2-2.
You're rattling off those numbers, and I thought, I'm going to go look at last year's game, the Week 18 game, because I knew it was a lower scoring game. I'm surprised to have to look it up that he actually threw for 359 in that game, despite such a low scoring game. Like, kind of like Tua last week.
And this is where, you know, we're all talking about Diggs being in decline and Davis doesn't do anything anymore, still to have that game. Anyway, to get to it, his number tomorrow night at that site is 244. So you can either, what, to that?
You can, yeah.
244.
Hammer the, what do they call them there?
Hires.
Hires. Hammer the hire.
Or, you know, over. I'll keep it just over. Right? Just FanDuel, over.
Okay.
You could do that. Or really, like, take last week into account and do so, like, league-wide, where so many quarterback numbers were lower. Allen last week was 232. They scored 34 points. 232. This game in Miami, they scored 21, 359. So how different is the team? And, you know, the matchup's probably mostly the matchup with respect to the Dolphins. Interesting to think about how you'd want to play that. Like, does he continue to lord over them? And especially if Tua is successful and then Miami is scoring, so you kind of have to throw the ball.
Right.
Then you could see some numbers. But just what I continue to think a lot about the Bills and just the league overall. What is happening right now in terms of passing offenses? And we've beaten to death the changes to the Bills roster and to their philosophy. You know, we kind of thought, I certainly did. What does that all add up to? And through week one, it's, you know, as they told us, spread the ball around, but the numbers don't add up to a lot. And it's, you know, more on the ground. And then it, ultimately, as usual, it's up to Allen to make it work, you know, jumping over people for touchdowns and, you know, trying to survive another season that way.
Yeah, I would expect that if the Dolphins, and I, you know, I'm anticipating, I said the same thing last week, and the Cardinals started well, but really they did not move the ball. They're totally, what are they, like 270-something for the game, I think, even, Arizona. So they did not, you know, move up and down the field on the Bills after really the first quarter and a half or so. But still, so I'm about to say the same thing about Miami. Like, I would expect Miami to move the ball. Well, I think that is a proven, capable, great offense. Whereas Arizona, I was just sort of speculating that they could be great, and maybe they will be. So I think if Tua gets his, and I anticipate that he will have enough success, like, that would, to me, drag the Bills into that game, where Allen is throwing it 45 times because it's kind of a shootout. And maybe you're down by 10 points at some point or worse even. I mean, they're down by 14 last week against Arizona, and you just feel like you gotta throw it. I've said quite a few times here since Sunday that in the meat of the game, right? And we know Allen had two pass attempts almost at the two-minute warning of the first half. From there on, where they scored all their points, they threw it a lot. They threw up 67% of the offensive snaps from there to that final drive where they got really conservative and ended up playing for the field goal. So they certainly can do it, but I think they're going to need, and they needed to do it because they were behind. And so if the Bills can somehow contain the Dolphins, if they can do some of what Jacksonville did to the Dolphins last week and keep them, you know, keep them down, then I would predict lots of James Cook and modest numbers for Allen, and you just go, you know, just go down there on a business trip and get out of there with a win. But if the Dolphins get loose on offense and Hill and Waddle make a couple of plays and it gets to be, you know, pinball time, then, you know, I think the Bills are going to find out just exactly how much faith they should have in that receiving core, because it may be really tested.
I hadn't heard it put about the end of the game against the Cardinals playing for the field goal, but I think I agree. We've talked about whether they should have kicked the field goal to go up six, mm-hmm. but did they play for it? They didn't throw a pass, right, on that last series? So you meant that.
No, I mean that, yeah.
That makes it worse.
That was my bigger criticism than actually kicking the field goal. You know, because fourth and three, you know, up by only three. I understood why they opted for the field goal of death, even though it's got that moniker. But I would have rather, you know, kept the ball longer and tried to score a touchdown, but they kind of turtled there. The third down play especially, it didn't even look like a play. It just sort of looked like get in line for a field goal.
Yeah, and like the game is about to end.
Yeah, like this is a game-winning kick or game-ending kick.
Right.
I absolutely meant played for the field goal because I think it's almost inarguable that's what they did.
You can only go so far with, like, what if they had lost? You know, they didn't lose. It counts. But, man, that we'd just be destroying that if Arizona.
Oh, my gosh.
If Murray hits Marvin Harrison on that one play, mm-hmm. and the Bills don't pull the game
or
out after
Ingram
that.
Or gets called for interference or whatever. Or they miss the field goal and Arizona ties it with a field goal of their own.
Yeah. That remains. I mean, the Bills won the game, and so he just goes away mostly. But that remains like sort of the big, one of at least the big questions about the Bills and McDermott is just like those edges. And we talked a little bit about this, but he said in one of the press conferences, you know, to Sal's question, I think it would have been Sunday. He's like, yeah, what would the analytics guy say about that? You know, sort of mocking it. And so, you know, I tweeted it. He's implying that he knows it's bad math to kick there. And if he even sort of set up for it, that's a little scary, but not necessarily wrong to say. Allen, by the way, this I didn't remember, but in that playoff win against Miami was sacked seven times. Three games in his career he's been sacked seven times. That one, Lambeau.
Oh, boy, yeah.
His third start in the league, shutout loss. And that Seattle game you loved.
Oh, the Seattle game here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I loved, because that for me was the moment that I decided, okay, this team is really there.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
They're for real. They're a contender.
Seven incompletions, seven sacks.
Wow.
31 for 38, 415 and three, but seven sacks in that game. That's the most he's ever been sacked in the game, those three examples. All right, how do you feel about tomorrow? How run happy will this team be? The field goal point from Sunday, although it's kind of ancient history, I guess, as the Bills are up again tomorrow night in Miami. 803-0550, Armando Salguero today at 4. Paul Hamilton will join us late in the show as we have a prospects challenge at the end of the week. And so we're that close to hockey. Chat with Paul here while we have the chance tonight. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, look forward to hearing from you next. This is WGR.
Yeah, I think that's what we want to see, is making sure that different guys are getting different touches, and that means guys are in different spots, but at the same time doing their job, getting open, catching the ball. In terms of operation, you know, we had a bunch of false starts and got to clean that up, got to clean up some of the penalties. Again, getting the play call in as quickly as possible, especially on the road, and me getting that out to the team and making adjustments in a timely manner. So it all goes hand in hand and takes 11 guys out there to produce a really good product, and that's what we're trying to do.
Josh Allen, I mean, we've listened to Allen so many times, he rarely steps in it. I'm not saying he did here necessarily, but he does mention get the play in on time in the course of that. So I don't know if that was a thing, but they did have 4 false starts against the Cardinals.
Yep.
Not crisp.
A little sloppy there.
Did you see Kyler Murray's quote about Harrison?
It's not my job to feed him.
He's asked, like, how come Harrison didn't get more targets? And he said, that's not my job. It's Drew's, the offensive coordinator. Now, that is way worse than Allen even alluding to getting the plays in on time. But how about that?
You
can't have that.
I saw that quote and I thought, like, is there... I didn't go look for it, but I thought, like, is there more there? Are we just pulling that out? Did he go on to say more that sounds less harsh than that? Because that just sounds, well, it sounds really harsh.
Well, it's not even really right. What is Murray beholden to the first read on every play call that comes in?
Right.
Like, of course, it reminds me of just, you know, drought Bills teams where we would hear people apologize for the quarterbacks because, oh, well, it's coaching and schemes and surrounding talent and all these other things. You know, how many games do you get? This depends on, like, your draft status and everything else. How many games do you get to establish yourself in the NFL as a starting quarterback? You know, not many. If you're Kyler Murray, it's different. If you're Bryce Young, who was a first overall pick like Murray was, it's almost time's up. Like, it's almost time's up for Bryce Young, I think, because it's gone so badly. But, you know, how could you ever, as a coach too, or as maybe anybody, get that opportunity and not assert yourself, like, to a certain extent where you'd be like, I mean, Murray's not exactly doing that. Murray's probably just making excuses, or he's trying to blame the guy. You know, we've heard a lot about his improved maturity. That is not a great statement.
No, that is not a mature response. The mature response, I mean, it's easy. I got to do a better job of finding him. Like, we, you know, he's a super talented player. He's going to really make our offense, really add elements to our offense that we needed, and it's my job to make sure we get him off.
He wouldn't even have to mean it.
That's it, right. Just say a bunch of word salad about how important he is and how much better you got to be. You walk away swearing under your breath all you want. Just when the cameras are rolling and the tape recorders are out, don't say it's not my job to get the 4th overall pick generational talent wide receiver the ball when you're the quarterback.
Especially when this is probably maybe why Murray is sensitive to it in this case, because of that clip of Harrison running free at the end. And that's the coordinator's fault. The guy beats the coverage. You have time in the pocket.
Beats the coverage is generous.
I know. I mean, it's the least you could say.
Russell Douglas just turned away and let him go, and then that was it. That was the
coverage. He's running free for the touchdown to maybe win the game, and like, oh, actually the play call was not such that I was supposed to even look at him.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
We have talked about this play a few times already. And, well, already, I mean, it's Wednesday. There's another Bills game tomorrow, and the game we're talking about was Sunday. But initially, like, I watched a Dan Orlovsky breakdown of it, I told you. And he demonstrated how Murray, like, he just wasn't looking at the right time. I also think I think Cam Lewis is the blitzer who jumps. Like, I don't even really know why, because I don't think Murray looks like he's about to throw, but Lewis is coming up the middle and I think leaps in the air. And it's very possible to me that at that moment, if Murray was looking for Harrison over there, he would have just seen a 39 with his arms up in the center of the line of scrimmage. And like that, I'm spinning over here now because I'm not going to throw it into this guy's face mask or his belly. So, you know, I think Murray probably got a tough deal there. If he's sensitive about it, I would understand it because not many people are going to go through the trouble of watching Dan Orlovsky talk about it or mention that Cam Lewis jumped at one maybe opportune moment. But still, just say the right thing. It's not hard.
It's so not hard. I'm stuck on it. Speaking of quarterbacks, right now in the league, I mentioned Carolina there. One example of a team that is in like pretty big trouble at quarterback. You know, you don't want to think only about the long term when it's only week two. Like the Raiders always for us were, they probably know they don't have the answer. They probably don't have the answer. But see what this year is, and maybe you end up draft free agency somehow to a potential franchise quarterback next year. I mean, that's one kind of, you know, bad quarterback mm-hmm. situation. I counted 8 teams that I would say have a bad quarterback situation. And I'm including the Raiders. Because the Raiders just don't have anybody that good.
Right.
I count 8 teams for this. You want to guess them or do you want me to just tell you? I have to remember it because I didn't write it down.
Carolina. You already said the Raiders. I definitely would include Cleveland. Bad quarterback. I think I'm at that point just about Pittsburgh.
Yes. I like Fields. I'm rooting for him. But I think if they do this again, where they just win their 9 games and get crushed in the first round or something because of intangibles or because of defense, then what do you do? Like, do they keep Justin Fields? Maybe Wilson never plays this way. I don't know. But that's they don't have it figured out. So I included Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm done in the AFC. I don't think the Jets have much of a plan beyond this year, but, you know, they've got a Hall of Famer right now. So, you know, long term, I don't think they're anywhere, but they're fine for now.
I don't know that they're fine. You don't know that they're fine either. But they might not be fine.
They might not, but what I'm saying is there's not any question. Like, they have a franchise quarterback. He's on a very short term, but they have one. You know, it may blow up. I don't know, but like, I wouldn't say they don't have a good situation right now.
I think I did include them.
You did, really?
I think so.
Okay.
Also, Tennessee.
I see how you could get there. Like, I think the jury is still out there. I mean, I know it looked bad, you know, on Sunday, a couple of different spots, but that still, he's got time. Is all, and so do they. So we'll see. I don't know how bullish you should be or I want to be about it. I was much more before they played. I was much more while they were ahead. Even like, oh, yeah, it's going to work out fine. And then just the roof caved in.
They're not too different from Carolina. They both have new coaches that want to throw the ball more and like make quarterback work. Carolina just has a bigger investment by the draft pick. But that really shouldn't even necessarily matter anymore. You know, like you got to be able to play, and there are busts all the time. So even if he's first overall, you don't wait forever.
I only count 2 teams that I would classify this way in the NFC: Carolina and the Giants.
Giants is one that hasn't been mentioned yet.
Yeah,
and then I would say Atlanta.
See, but I like Penix.
You can like Penix.
He's there for a pivot. So, like, I didn't include New England because we haven't seen Drake May yet, but they've got at least a plan. And if you like Atlanta, I want to give them that. Like, I they've got a guy in place to take over, you know, if Cousins. The trickier part of that whole thing might be if Cousins is compromised and can't athletically do what needs to be done to run a full offense, then they're stuck.
That's most of the point. The point is, like, there's no investment in Brissett in New England. He's there until they decide to put May in for whatever reason. Could just be an injury. Like, he's just there. They're biding time. Cousins is a massive investment, and they're the division favorite, whereas New England has, like, there's no expectations for the Patriots short term. So I don't think they have a bad situation. I think they think they, or they might think they have their future, and it's just a matter of when they go starting to find out. Atlanta, they do have Penix, or else it would be close to a disaster, which is, you know, to be fair, who liked that draft pick idea, you know? Like, why do both things?
Right, I liked the prospect, but the fit was very strange.
Why do both things? Why sign Cousins and do that? You don't know that you'll be able to pick Penix, but you're picking eighth, and having six quarterbacks in the first round, your odds are pretty good. You know, it's also a matter of who you like. But there are some really interesting, as this season starts, this I'm talking about and thinking a lot about that passing yards point from week one. This is contributing to that, where you have the Browns and the Falcons and Carolina and others and almost the Jets, where you wonder if the guy can play at all. You know, that's where we're at with Watson. That's where we're at with Cousins. Mm-hmm. It can be said about Rodgers. Rodgers looked, I mean, he threw the ball fine, but
he can't move.
Can't move. And then Bryce Young, even though he's younger, is kind of also this right now. So a number of teams that are in kind of like some amount of a crisis mode at that position. And they all have their different, you know, the situations are all a little bit different. Like New England, I didn't mention again, because they can just sort of, they can go at their own pace with their guy. But Atlanta's supposed to win. Cleveland is supposed to win. Cleveland, with what happened last year, and, you know, you're in a window here where mm-hmm. you have a talented team. If it just goes up in smoke because your quarterback can't do the job, you know, eventually you make a move there.
Yeah, I wonder how long they wait.
And that's also those other teams. The Jets know. The Jets are legally bound to not make a change.
There's no, yeah, his leg's going to have to fall off for them to make a move on him.
The Jets are not bringing in Ryan Tannehill in case for insurance.
At least not right now. I mean, I get, they could pivot. If something happened to Rodgers, I would think they might bump to the front of the line of, like, where's Ryan Tannehill's phone number? We need a guy.
I don't know. I think he's probably too good. Like, last year, the Jets did no such thing. And they had 16 more games.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting situations, though. Like, I could see all of those teams because, you know, it's not always that the coach has the full say when it's something like this, but he's probably got a lot, you would think. You'd like it that way. And Atlanta could move. Cleveland could move. Jets won't. Giants, I mean, I don't know what they move to.
Drew Lock.
They could do that.
Yep.
Watson, Cousins, Daniel Jones, all like huge contracts, which makes that more complicated. Bryce Young, younger, different, but still a big investment.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't shock me if all those teams in a month, just not because of injury,
right,
went to someone else.
I wonder how long it takes Cleveland to get there. Like, I recognize they played a team that is, you know, can be, I mean, usually not on the road, but they can be, you know, hell on wheels on defense. And Dallas certainly got a lot of pressure on Watson, but there were a lot of bad throws with time, a lot of throws that he just passed on from clean pockets because I'm guessing he just didn't have the confidence to deliver the ball on time or accurately or whatever. So if that doesn't improve, they're in Jacksonville this week. I mean, I don't know. If you're watching him sail balls over the opposing sideline, how long do you wait? You know, like, you've got another guy that's won games in the league, and yes, there's the contract, but you got a season to try to have and an elite defense and a team that won a bunch of games last year with your name here playing quarterback. So that's the team that I would think has the most urgency. I would expect Carolina to wait the longest, just because even if Young gets on track, it's not like there are expectations there. It's a new coach. It's a new system. We're starting over. So, you know, what's the ceiling there? 7 wins, maybe? So even if you're falling way short of that, but Young is making progress, I would, or even if he's just flatline, I'm going to keep going.
I think you'd agree. The risk is the rest of the players. You know, organizationally, that makes sense. That could be the Titans, too. That pick six Levis threw. Like, we're trying to win here.
Right.
You know, the risk you run, new coaches, first-time head coaches, is, all right, what are we doing here then if you're just going to play this guy no matter what because he's young and he was a high draft pick? I think that can be the problem for the coach. Brad is with us. Hello, Brad.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Just a quick story. I think it was maybe close to 2007. I started a new job in the GTA in Toronto, and I was a lone Bills fan in a huge factory. And a guy asked me if I listened to WGR. I said nope. And he said, "You got to listen to Show Up in the Bulldog. They're always complaining about the Bills." And here I am, like, I guess, like, what, 16, 17 years later, still listening to you guys. You guys are the best. I love your show. You got me through a lot of dark times, honestly, in my life. And, yeah, I'm going to keep listening. And I can't believe we got through the drought and now we're here. Like, it's hard to believe we are.
I kind of can't believe it sometimes too, Brad.
It's just insane.
Thank you for saying all that. That means a lot, really. Thank you.
I do have a point, though. As far as James Cook, I know there's a lot of talk and over the years about just making fun of that, like, barbaric, like, running game kind of style. And to me, I think it's not even about that now. It's about just establishing him as a weapon, whether it's, like, screens or, like, draws or, like, just making the other defenses know, like, hey, you have to worry about him as well as Allen running, as well as other things, right? Anyway, that's just the way I see it. I don't think it's just about running.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Strictly. So, anyway, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Brad.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I think he'll, you know, he had his troubles catching the ball last season at times. But, you know, he got targeted, well, three times. He caught three balls. So no drops, no fumbles. Yeah, he's going to be on the field a lot. He'll approach or maybe exceed the yards, total yards he had last year, I think, if he stays healthy.
I don't really know if I want it, though. I don't want to let go of wanting this team to be more in attack mode and, you know, all the running game stuff and, you know, dump offs to James Cook. I'm not yet to a point where I think it is like a recipe for success. But the league is different so far this year and was last year. And the Bills clearly, by everything they've done and I guess said, do want to be, you know, different in this way.
Yeah. Well, I think there's evidence from last year, once Brady even took over, the sort of roll-in touchdown that Cook got in Kansas City was not just a dump off. That was we're clearing people out for you. The Philly play where he dropped it, same thing. So what the caller, I think, is saying is more of that, right? Less dump offs, less, he did mention screen passes, but, you know, out in the formation and, you know, split out, whether in the slot or whatever, and see if you can clear some space for him.
Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, Armando Salguero, coming up in about 16 minutes. This is WGR. Fun time of year. NFL underway, college football, baseball, hockey coming, the Prospects Challenge in Buffalo this weekend, starting Friday night. The White Sox, mentioned baseball there, opened the door for myself about the White Sox.
What, did they win or something? Did they win a game last night?
I don't know. I don't know their most recent results. You know their record?
Have they got 30 wins?
33.
Man.
33 and 113, which is the most losses for any major league team through the same number of games, 146 games, since 1901. Grady Sizemore is the manager of the White Sox. Did this come up on the air?
No, I told you off the air, I think, one day. I said, because we were apart, like, vacations or whatever, some point in the summer, and I knew how much you and your wife enjoyed Grady Sizemore when he was a Bison, even.
Yeah.
And so I just said to you, hey, you know the White Sox new manager is? And you didn't know, and it was Grady.
That's right. I remember now. I looked it up in here after you told me that. This is, like, maybe the worst team in the big four sports that we've ever lived through. Maybe that's a little bit much, but, you know, who's the worst NFL team? Is it like the Browns with Hugh Jackson when they went winless, or the Lions went winless one year? Something about baseball, though. The fact that
70s Buccaneers team maybe has claim to that. But yeah, baseball, I mean, How many? So
the bad teams win.
Yeah, right.
What sometimes.
So 33 and what is their
113?
Oh my God. So
they're 80 under.
They're not even. They probably won't get to 40.
16 games left. Yeah, that'd be going 7-9. They're definitely not on that pace.
No. Like
3-40. 13.
4-12. 122.
They're going to be worse than that.
This is incredible.
I know. They're going to be worse than that.
I at some point in the summer, I know. I even said something to my wife. Could my wife possibly care any less about the Chicago White Sox? But I was reading. Maybe I was getting ready to talk to Brett Boone or something. I don't know. I was thinking about baseball, and I was looking at them. And it was when I was getting ready to talk to Brett while you were away because they were riding a 21 game losing streak. They won that night, and then I talked to Brett Boone the next day, and I said to my wife, I'm like. Like losing 100 games is horrendous. Like going 62-100 is really, really bad. Yes. And they are slaughtering that. I mean, they're just
put me down for 38-124.
That is incredible.
38-124 is 5-11 the rest of the way, which is better than their season pace. Armando Salguero on Bills Dolphins after this. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.